QuiteTheThingMedia.com. The network, without constraints.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the last part in our six-part series on how to write a book. Before we get there, again, asking you to visit wrongtermmemory.com or buymeacoffee.com/wrongtermmemory. Give us a little tip and we will put it towards hosting costs, basically. Anyway, Colin, how are you, mate?
I'm good, yeah. It's been great going through this series. I'm quite sad we're at the end of it, but I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And a lot of that is down to a wonderful guest who's joining us for the last time for this series anyway, Martin Ramsey. Martin, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. It's a shame to come to the end finally, but yeah, hopefully be back on. Thanks for having me for six whole episodes.
Yeah, so like when you start writing a book, I suppose what you want to do is sell it, basically. So is that what we're going to be speaking about this part, basically?
We're covering the final part, and I think the scariest part for some people, certainly for me, which is actually putting yourself out there and presenting it to the world.
And the thing is, probably when it comes to selling it, it doesn't particularly matter if it's that good or not, as 50 Shades of Grey, which came out 10 years ago, kind of highlights this erotic novel based on a piece of Twilight fan fiction, believe it or not. This mad BDSM fan, Dr. Christian Grey, or I don't know if he's a doctor, but... And some naive student, absolute trash. And as always, Martin, I'd like you to read one or two of the reviews, please.
Are these the one-star ones?
Yes.
Okay, these are one-star reviews on Amazon. The headline in that one-star review was Mills and Boons meets porn. And a comment, sorry, but it's not better than that. Porn is available if you want it on the internet. I guess some women have not got involved in porn, so this seems like scandalous fun. I found it depressing. Okay, it turns out to be about a relationship, and perhaps the woman gets to have a bit of power in the end in this relationship. Wait and see. There are two more glorious books with the words mummered, or I pushed a lock of hair behind my ear, or I bit my lip. You want to scream, but it is very popular, and I guess that's your point, Jack.
Yeah, like again, not read your books, I don't know if you put any porn into it, but like, could you imagine trying to write something sexy, Martin? Something very much when I pushed her against the wall and lifted up her skirt. It's making me cringe even as I speak about it, to be honest.
Yeah, erotic fiction isn't something I'm going to dive into, I don't think. And I think it's the, again, for public consumption. I don't think I've ever read anything sexy, to be honest, in that sense. A lot of any kind of romantic interest in books, a lot of it's actually unsaid, and that's the quality of the writing, that you get subtext there, and that's really what's driving the interest of the book. But, you know, we've all been in relationships. You presumably speak about wishes and speak about sex with partners. But that's very much of an audience, you hope, of one. That's a different ballgame, I imagine.
It's kind of similar to your book in the sense that it has a very niche market, which was sort of lonely housewives. You're going for, I say very niche market, you're going for Rangers fans. There's millions of us, but there's millions of lonely housewives as well. Kind of going back to earlier episodes about having an idea. Do you think that E.L. James, who wrote this book, could have expected it to blow up like this, or was it just sort of luck and circumstance?
I don't know enough about it, but there are probably few authors that expect absolute success out of what they do, or expect to retire off what they've written. As far as I'm aware, authors don't get into it for that reason, because it's normally not a particularly lucrative endeavour.
Podcasting, sorry, yeah. Unless you're a big potato, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But it just takes something to click, doesn't it? And enough buzz to be generated. I can't remember when this came out, 2011. So that's, what, just a year or two after Twitter?
2008, 2009, I think.
Catching that different kind of marketplace, I suppose, and way of sharing word of mouth is now changing, I guess. And again, this wasn't shared because of its literary genius. It had something unique, and it touched whatever buttons. And it got a lot of women talking. So when it shared quickly, and I think that must have been pretty new.
Yeah, there are some other criticisms of it. So they're not calling.
There is, yeah. I mean, as well as the Da Vinci Code and Morrissey's book, there was many articles collated showing you the worst lines and some phrases like Anastasia discussing her inner goodness. It's just, well, it's just poorly written structure between the two characters. But one of the main things that came out of it was that the actual relationship between the two of them was seen as quite abusive rather than romantic. And probably be quite interesting, even just 10 years on from it, what the reaction to this book would be now compared to 10 years ago, with the way the world sort of moved on in those 10 years. Similar, though, for me to the Dan Brown book. I don't think it's a bad thing putting books into people's hands that don't normally read, so it's good from that point of view. But in terms of the story, though, or what it does, I think the fact that it gave me a Halloween costume one year I dressed up as 50 Shades of Grey for Halloween. And that's probably the best thing I can say about this book. It did that inspiration for me.
Yeah, that's not saying much about... They made a fucking film. It's like $1 billion, not industry, but it's absolutely...
huge.
Sort of taken over, basically, for, again, just a piece of shit writing. But what are your experiences of basically selling it, Martin? Obviously, not to me.
So the thing arrives. This is a scary part of the job, for me anyway, because I've enjoyed talking to you boys for six episodes, but still at the back of my mind is, who cares about what I've gone through? Who's that interested? And that's all of a sudden, once you've hit send on that final draft. And once you start getting right, how many copies do you want ordered? And, you know, the Heart and Hand shop is, we did a pre-sale column, which is one thing I would heartily recommend if you have that ability, because pre-sale gives you an idea of your market and your interest. And it's also, if we're being blunt, a lot of money up front that you can invest in it. But then you start getting the sleepless nights, I'm being honest, because, right, what are people going to think of this? And I've been talking about it on Twitter for how long, and it's your name on it, and I don't know if I can explain it fully, how invested you are emotionally in this, how inextricably linked you feel as a person to this collection of pages, and that any criticism of it you're going to feel. You know that the world's a scary place at times in terms of online criticism, and that Rangers fans don't mess about, knowing the support as well as I do online, especially those who are anonymous. So all of a sudden, things that you haven't really thought about because you're so invested in this thing from start to finish are now at the forefront of your mind. Shit. What if it's rubbish? What if it's absolute garbage? Or what if people don't get it? And all of these doubts now start to take over. Doubts that maybe were there before, but I just blocked them out because you have a book to write and you've got a job to do, and you genuinely are invested in this whole thing, emotionally, intellectually. So that starts to get a bit scary. But That's part of the gig. You just have to hope for the best. As long as you're happy with what you've written, as long as you're proud about what you've written, yeah, you could change B bits, and I think that sense is a bit scrappy. There's always going to be that. I just mean the overall tone and content. And I was launching a book during a pandemic isn't advisable, if I can get one bit of advice across, because you don't have a live launch, you don't have a physical hard night to actually sell the book and get people in, get people drunk and get people buying your book. I think that that would have been better, but clearly the exposure, certainly through Heart and Hand, that we have on the socials, means that you could market it, you could get it out there. I released a couple of chapters, I think, Colin, on the Heart and Hand website, a couple of samples. I had been dropping screenshots of paragraphs because during lockdown they were showing a lot of old games because there was nothing else to show, if you remember, early on in that lockdown period. A couple of those games were games that featured, so, you know, absolutely wire in. So you're kind of trailing it. So that part of it was fun. I think I recorded a kind of, I recorded an audio book sample of one chapter with some visuals, obviously, for YouTube.
It was great, by the way. Like, I listened to that.
You wait for the audio book to come out, and I think that we're kind of settled on that. So any way that you can just get it out there, but I'm not a salesman. Happy writing, happy thinking, but I'm not. Despite what people might think, because it's all I talked about on Twitter for so long, I was just sharing my excitement about being involved in and absorbed in a process. I cringe at the thought of going out and flogging your wares. I needed you, Colin, really, because you have absolutely no compunction at all with whoring whatever out, and nor should you. You create work, and well, no one else is going to sell it for you. So that's something I felt I had to push myself into an unnatural position as, are people bored of this now? And you maybe leave it a couple of weeks. Oh, by the way, yeah, this game's been talked about today. Well, you know, here's the link. And it's hard. And then you've got to wait for word of mouth. Now, we've recorded hundreds of podcasts, boys, and I've written a couple articles over the years on Follow, whatever the kind of fans' website. The response is pretty immediate. You get that on Twitter, you get it in the threads, and you get that bang, bang, bang. You've listened to an hour-long podcast or whatever, or taken 10 minutes to read an article. Books don't work like that. It takes a long time for people to just get the time to sit down and read it, and then, you know, to actually, you know, finish it and make sense of it, speak about it, whatever. So that word of mouth, that buzz with a book is a lot longer. But the reviews were good early, and they were very helpful, and the national newspapers and whatever doesn't hurt either. I don't think many people hated it. It still has the overall 5-star rating on Amazon anytime I pop in and check. So, you know, and you read some, you talk about 1-star reviews, Jack, and some of the scathing things we've seen. There's been a couple that people just taking the time to say, look, I was given this as a gift. Rangers books are usually self-congratulatory, chest-pumping nonsense. I didn't have high hopes, but this was remarkable. It's a lot deeper than that. It's something for any football fan, and it was genuinely funny. So you're like, right, someone gets it. Someone gets exactly what I was trying to do with this whole thing, and when you read stuff like that, it does make you think, right, well, that was worth a year of my life, kind of thing. But it's scary, and you've got to keep at it. And it's, yeah, some people love it. I don't.
Well, that's the thing I was going to. You've kind of hit a couple of points that I was going to ask you a question about. Like, I'm particularly bad as well about self advertising. Did you ever think people are going to get bored of this? I don't want to push it out there. People will unfollow me or just think this guy is at it, basically, because I get these self-doubts all the time with what we're doing just now, for example. I just kind of, yeah, have qualms about it.
Totally, because it's not in my nature to be like that. But then, you know, I have authors that I follow on Twitter. I enjoy pods, of course, and I don't see them slowing up and pushing their stuff, and again, why should they? No one's going to sell it for you, so you put a lot of work into it, and again, it's just forcing yourself into a position of discomfort. And also, I don't know how other authors or, I don't know, musicians or actors or whatever feel, once you've finished it, it's kind of done, and you do want to kind of move on with the next thing, and it's a weird kind of process there that clearly you need to talk about it, because you do. You're not going to make money. Too much money out of this, let's be honest. But all you want is to sell enough so that when I go back to the publisher, as I did, here's my new proposal, that they email me back in 5 minutes and say, yes, same deal, right away, away. It's about making enough that it makes it worthwhile for the people who actually do the publishing business to allow you to do another one. That's all you get interested. Will someone allow me to do this again? So you have to sell X amount, I guess. It was never going to be something I was going to retire on, because authors make, I'm not even getting into how many pence they make off any copy sold on Amazon, but it's not a lot.
Martin, some of the things you hear people saying is like, forget traditional publishing, it's on its way out. We had conversations, you and I, when we were putting the book up on the website as one way of buying it. You mentioned Amazon being the easiest way for somebody to buy it, but also probably the worst place for somebody to buy it from the author's point of view. It would have been probably a hell of a lot easier for you to self-publish and just release this on Kindle as a book with no physical copies, but I don't think you'd have felt the same sense of achievement. Did you not have a paper copy, that pulp in your hands, and that physical book that you could hand to people and give to people, and actual proper visual representation of your work? And I think for that reason, I don't think physical books will ever die out completely, do you?
I hope not. I like buying books. I like holding books. Now, I've got a Kindle, and I reserve that for obviously books that some things that are print, or books that I don't know if I'll like that, but I'll give it a shot. So I don't mind that. But there's some that say, no, I think I will like that. And there's nothing, there's obviously something very tactile about it. But you're right, as an author, first time, you want to hold it. And then you want to put it up there next to your favourite authors on your bookshelf saying, I did that as well. And listen, there are both, and that's absolutely fine. But no, I hope that the traditional print media in terms of books doesn't disappear, because there is something special about that crisp feeling, and then it gets worn out because, you know, you've been on that journey so often. I like that. And I like a bookshelf, by the way. And I think, if we're being honest, that's another part of it. It's there. Mine actually isn't. I do have a bookshelf in the living room, and there are a few on it. But my other bookshelves are in my library up the stairs, and that no one really sees that. So it's not a show off thing. But, you know, when I'm sitting up there, I do like to peer about, so what's next kind of thing. There's plenty of those books I haven't read yet, but they're there. I'll pick them up at some point. You know, there's always that intention, but they are there just, you know, for that. I like that physical feeling.
Sorry, Jack, I'd say it will be one of my lasting things when I look back on this lockdown over the last 12 months. In 5 years, 10 years' time, it will be one of the things that sort of comes to mind with it, will be everybody sitting in front of bookcases. Every news reporter, every journalist, everybody showing off their books and pausing some of them and seeing some stuff in the background that they didn't want you to see.
The people that have got the fucking bookshelf wallpaper.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife works up in our fourth room or whatever. I call it a library just because it's got two bookshelves in it. But so she has that backdrop. That's just how it kind of works. But that book I was telling you about earlier, in a previous episode, the Hitler biography by Ian Kershaw, that's right in the line of vision of, so she has to cover it up with something. She has to put this, and obviously she's kind of blurred the screen now or whatever else. And I was like, I can't have people asking me about that. I said, well, what's the problem? Ask them. She's got about six Nazi books right behind her, or the history of World War II right in line of vision at any conference call.
I do think there's money in an app for somebody which you can actually use to create your own virtual bookcase, to create your own background, to make yourself look like a real scholar. You could pick 100 books, create your background, and that becomes your Zoom background or your Teams background. I did think about that at the start of lockdown, but I got writer's block, Martin. So.
It's actually not a bad idea, mate. I'm going to wrap it up with a John Steinbeck quote. Martin, what do you think of this? Unless a reviewer has the courage to give you unqualified praise, I say just ignore the bastard.
Yeah, amen to that. Yeah. Listen, bad reviews are out there. That's part of the deal. What I hate is that people think, what's he writing for? Why is he writing a book? I'm like, well, that's not fair. You can engage with anything I've written. If you don't agree with something I've written, or you think it's poorly worded, then fair enough. But just this, why is he writing a book? Is it something very kind of Scottish about about that, how dare anyone
get above your station. Don't get above your station. Again, lots of great advice. It's been I've really enjoyed this 6-part series, Martin, so thanks for bringing all your advice and stories to mostly Heart and Hand listeners, but I'm sure there's some people listening out there that will have took something from the series anyway.
I hope so, and listen, thank you for having me on, and hopefully we'll be back on something else in the future.
Just echo that, Martin, thanks so much for coming on. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and if I have to take one thing away from it, it's that you can't spell Alan McGregor. Thank you.
Once.
Yeah, really good stuff. Thanks for listening.
Browse only the best pods in the best network. QuiteTheThingMedia.com.